Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So we are wide awake, alert, and enthusiastic. We have already been on the air for more than an hour when we did our webinar this morning.
Indeed.
And if you missed that, it was full of great information. In fact, if any of you have ever done a survey after you've participated in something like that, you often get this. How do you rate this? 1 to 2, 3 to 4, and so on until you get a 10. The worst we had today was an 8, 9, and then there were some 10s.
There we go.
So we're happy that people liked the material that we use to update what is happening in the market. And if you want to see that, it's easy. All you have to go do is go to our website, irradio.com. Click on the video tab, and the December update will be there. And while you're at it, on the homepage, you can now register for the January 8th. January 8th.
That's it. You got it.
Yeah, the first Saturday is the 1st of January, the New Year's. We just didn't think there'd be a lot. You know, we'd be competing against football and other stuff, and nobody'd want to watch the show. So,
as entertaining as we are, yeah, it's hard to beat the bowl game. So,
that one will be January 8th, and if you can't, you know, maybe a little early to know whether or not it's going to be on your calendar, but if you register, you'll get a replay link anyway, so you'll know that it is still available. We'll be starting a brand new year with all sorts of normal uncertainties about whether the market's going up or down, which is a big uncertainty right now, matter of fact. And if you want to talk about that, we have an open phone line. Just give us a call. Paul will put you in the queue. It's 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. And you'll be put in the queue. We just need to talk about the markets, portfolio, securities that are in your account or one you're considering. We want to stay. That's our subject. So there's a lot of other things we could talk about, but that's not what we're here for on this hour. 800-465-8770. And if you don't receive our week in review, which normally goes out on Mondays a few times, occasionally we're a little late, or holiday interrupts.
There you go.
Send us an email, help@irradio.com. Put week in review, or at least review in the subject line. We need your first and last name in the body of the email, and you will start receiving it. If you decide that you want to be one of the 1% who unsubscribes, it's easy to do. You just click the unsubscribe button, and you never, ever get another email from us. Anyway, we are set to go here with a live call-in show. That's why we give you a phone number, 800-465-8770. This was an interesting week in the stock market, if you were paying attention to it at all. It's actually been an interesting month.
Another interesting week, yeah.
Yeah, since the market, the Dow Jones topped out first week of November, and it's just been kind of slipping and sliding downhill ever since. I think there's an old song, Slipping and Sliding Away or something. We should find that for bump music, because that's what's been happening here. Anyway, there are a combination of factors that pushed the stocks lower, extending weekly losses. One was Friday. We got the jobs report. There are fears of accelerated Fed tightening to fight inflation. And, of course, it was not helped when Janet Yellen and Jerome Powell ended up with conflicting statements about what should be done. That accelerated the downtrend. And then, of course, there's Omicron. It's put investors on the defensive, trying to figure out, what do I do to save my account? The Dow tested its 200-day moving average. The 500, the S&P 500, ended the week below its 50 moving average. Now, that's really a key factor when you're looking at markets. The 200 is really serious because the 200, technically, you're in bear market territory.
Bad stuff just happened. That's right. That's not good at all.
Yeah, 50 is kind of like the yellow traffic light. Do you think you can get through the intersection? Is there a cop sitting around the corner which is going to stop you? I mean, you just don't really know. The NASDAQ 100 closed below the 50-day moving average. And when we start breaking the market down into sectors like utilities, staples, energy, and so on, there's 11 basic sectors. 9 of them are backing up.
So this is not, yeah, this doesn't currently doesn't show signs of a huge extended drawdown, but it's certainly a negative move, and it's plenty to get us moving a little more defensively in our client portfolios.
Oh, yeah. One of our basic rules is we don't like to lose money.
There you go. Should be everyone's rule, but it's not. But that is one that we follow.
Well, we used to drink the industry Kool-Aid and assume that as long as you're diversified in various asset classes and various sectors, then over time, you could be Rumpelstiltskin and everything will be okay. But that only depends on you having such a large account that losing 50% doesn't make a difference in your lifestyle.
No, you need unlimited patience and unlimited time for that to work out for you. Because sometimes people in retirement that are living off of their retirement portfolio don't have a decade or more to not spend any money to wait for their portfolio to come back. So it's just not realistic for people that we work with.
No, and the assumptions, the rate of return assumptions that most people build their portfolio on are anywhere between 80 to 90 years of average. And those have nothing to do with what's actually going on in the market. And most of the time, the people we talk to never tell us that's how much time they have left.
Correct.
Have you noticed that, Perry?
Too large. It's just too large to say, well, as long as you got 70, 80, 100 years, this will work out on your side. And it will. That's the way the math works. It'll eventually come back around. So far, that it's worked out that way. But if you need to spend your money now, if you have been saving for a particular goal, or if now you're in retirement, you don't have, well, let's just sit back for 20 years and not spend this. That's not something that we have the luxury of doing in most cases.
So one of the issues that has been causing people to become a little more conservative and defensive in their approach to the market has been the high prices, the valuation, the difference between the profits these companies are making and what we have to pay for them. And we talked about that at some length today in our webinar. And if you missed that, just go to our website, iriradio.com, click on the video tab, and you'll be able to watch the replay. The link's already up and active. And you want to talk to us today, we have an open phone line. It's 800-465-8770. But when we look forward, and we don't predict the market. We interpret current market data. We don't make a forecast. But what's important when you're looking at market data, we just mentioned a lot of portfolios, most portfolios actually are structured off of up to 100-year-old rate of return data. When you take a look at the earnings of companies today and the prices, that brings up the PE ratio. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Schiller at Yale has modified that for, I'd say, a less speculative look at earnings to see how they kind of trend as opposed to knee-jerk quarterly reactions. And it's called the cyclically adjusted price earnings ratio, or CAPE. And when we look at that, we are above 40. And the last time we were there was a little higher, actually, was in 2000, tech bubble.
Uh-huh. That does tend to give one pause, which means, as we've been telling everyone, this market is in extended condition, and in markets they can stay there for a long period of time. But that means, like you said before, Don, the yellow light better be on. You better be being cautious about what's going on, because in this territory, the last time this happened, we did have an extended downturn after it went slightly higher than where we are right now. So we're in territory that's not normally reached in the market.
Well, if you're a math or engineer person, we'd talk about standard deviations.
Sure.
Yeah, that's hard to do on the radio.
It
so,
is. Yeah.
So we'll pass it. We're in extended territory here. Can we stay there? The answer is yes. Yeah. The market can stay extended in speculative, irrational modes for long periods of time. Wasn't it Greenspan who came up with irrational exuberance?
That's correct. Alan Greenspan
said the market's overpriced, it's irrational exuberance. So, well, it was 3 years of irrational exuberance before it all fell apart. So the fact that the market, current market, is grossly overextended on the Dr. Shiller's ratio doesn't mean it can't stay there. But it's not statistically, it can't stay there forever.
Which to us means we're at higher levels of risk. So the market is up. The market can continue to go up, but it's going up on the basis of higher risk, which means you need to be much more involved in watching over what it is you own, because if it does turn south, it's probably going to happen relatively quickly, and you need to be ready to do something about it.
But then if you're in a standard portfolio that is broadly diversified through asset classes and sectors and all sorts of different kinds of stocks, take an Alfred E. Newman approach. What? Me worry about what? Yeah, well, if you don't mind going through bear markets and losing 40 or 50% of your account and taking 7 to 13, 14 years to recover, then, yeah, Alfred E. Newman's got it made.
No problem. You just don't have to worry about it. In fact, you can't really worry about it, because whoever handed you that pie chart's not going to change it based on what's going on in the market these days. It's going to continue to hold the same things in the same proportions to each other no matter what. And that's relatively scary when the market changes so much so quickly these days. It's just not a comfortable thing. You can be way out of step with the market, and they're just going to wait for it to come back around.
So after the tech bubble, which peaked in March of 2000, and it didn't collapse until 2001, and then it was almost 3 years of just drip, drip, drop, drip, drop, drip, drip, drop, try to rally and continue to collapse. Tech bubble, actually, the tech stocks as an index were down almost 90% in 2.5, 2.9 months. Now, that's a long time to watch money just erode and erode and erode, because you believe the company's a good company and it's bound to do okay sooner or later.
That's too long. No one should have to do that. No one should have to sit there and watch their portfolio get eaten alive like that just because it's easier for their advisor. One thing we do have to do, Don, is get out of here for our first break. We're up against our break. I'd like to remind everyone that our next market update, like Don said, we had one this morning, and we will have one again on January 8th, 9 o'clock, Saturday morning. If you'd like to register for that, go to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Just go to the webinar page and give that webinar link a click, and you'll get an email back. And on January 8th, you just click that link, and you will be live online with us. We will again go through what's going on out there in the market, what we're kind of looking at in our portfolios, and we always have plenty of time for your questions. We always get great questions during these webinars, and we always take enough time to answer everyone's questions. So it's a great time to get a second opinion on anything you hold in your portfolio, or just get to ask the question about what's going on out there in some particular sector you're looking at. Again, you can register for that at iriradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us this afternoon, we would love to talk to you. Give us a call, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine. There's gotta
be a little rain sometime, and by golly, we have some today.
Indeed we do.
Yeah, I was looking out the window a little while ago, and I can hardly see the ships that are anchored out in the sound.
Fogged in today.
They are fogged in. Of course, they don't care. They're at Anchorage. They can't.
They're just hanging out anyway. Yeah, they're going nowhere right
now. They can't get into port to unload their stuff. Yeah. That's what we call the supply chain problem.
That is a visual representation. That's exactly what it looks like.
Well, when we went to break, we were talking about the tech bubble bursting, and there are some significant lessons from that. That's one of the things that we really do need to take time to do. When we make a trade and it works, we want to go back and see, how did we make the decision? Was that the right? It did work, but what were we looking at? And it's just as important, if not more important, to go back on a bad trade. I bought this. It didn't work. I'm out of it, protecting my capital. What could I have looked at that would have allowed me either to make a better entry or to perhaps just not buy it at all? What did I miss? That is how you learn to be a better investor, to buy stuff and say, over time, it's all going to work out, frankly, is marketing material and it's baloney. And the classic place is to look at the tech bubble. The tech bubble, with what we were referring to in the last segment as Dr. Schiller's CAPE ratio, above 40, where we are now, it was at 44. Over the next 10 years, so that you're an intermediate term investor, over the next 10 years, even in the S&P, which is more broadly diversified, you were still negative 15% on a buy and hold basis. If you were in the NASDAQ 100 and you just held on for 10 years, you're still minus 55% of your account.
Ouch, that hurts.
So what do you do? Well, one, you got to take a look at how do you make those decisions and what can you learn from it? What can we learn from that? Dr. Schiller's CAPE ratio is at 40 now, approaching where we were in the tech bubble, and that brings up some cautionary data, cautionary interpretation of the data. What we do know is there's a strong correlation between these valuations and where the market's likely to be 20 years from now.
And it's important to remember the similarity between now and 2000. Prior to the 2000 tech bubble bust in the 90s, everyone was making money. It didn't matter if you had been in the market for 20 years or 20 days. Everybody was buying things and making big hits and home runs all over the place. And everybody assumed they had cracked the market and they knew what they were doing. And in the last 2 years, since the bottom of the COVID lockdown, everything's been going straight up. The recovery's been very strong in the market. And again, lots of people have entered the market during this time when they were locked down at home, and they think they have the market figured out, and they think it's easy, and they're always going to make money, and that's never true. But they don't know that yet.
That's true. I mean, there have been stocks that are going up 10, 20, 30% a day back in the tech bubble. And, I mean, if you talk to somebody about risk management, they were deaf.
Yes, there was no such thing. Yeah. The world had changed, the business paradigm had changed, and the internet changed everything, and everything was going to go up forever.
So it's pretty much the way the assumptions are being made today with meme stocks, which are basically many of those stocks or companies have been on bankruptcy routines. They're waiting to go bankrupt, and all of a sudden, young millennials and some guru start hyping it, and the stock price just accelerates, and people the professionals make money watching those kinds of trades. Most of the retailers really don't, and then they don't talk about losers. No. So you don't hear about it. But let's go. If you go back and fill out the intake questionnaire in a financial planner's office, how old are you? How much do you have? When do you expect to retire? What's your time frame and stuff? Most everybody says, I'm intermediate to long term. I'm not here for short-term trades. Okay, so let's take the current market conditions based on Dr. Schiller's valuation data and say, where were we likely to be in 20 years? Well, based on his data, we should expect an average rate of return out of the stock market of somewhere between 2 to 4%. You look at interest rates at the bank or even bonds and you say, well, that's a pretty good return. Except that your portfolio that you've just built with your neighborhood financial advisor or on a website is assuming you're going to earn 9 to 10, not 2 to 4. Your portfolio is not structured for this kind of return. Now, but in 20 years, there are going to be better returns, and there are also going to be years where you are losing money. So the question is, do you hold your nose and close your eyes and play Rumpelstiltskin and wait 20 years and hope that it works out okay and you get at least two? Well, we talked about that on our webinar today. There, somebody needs to be paying attention to this along the way. You don't get in an airplane to go from here to anywhere and expect the pilot to close his eyes, go to sleep, and walk out of the cockpit after you're on the ground with a safe landing. You expect him to pay attention, even though there's autopilots.
Right.
You know, that reminds me of the old joke, ladies and gentlemen, we're glad to have you on board. Now that we are in the air, we want you to know that this is an inaugural flight of our artificial intelligence software, and we will be landing on time, on time, on time, on time, on time, on time.
Right.
And you go, that's when everybody believes in God.
So where was that parachute? Yes.
That's right. Anyway, back to this valuation issue with the S&P roughly around 4,700. If we end up looking at the way the market has reacted over the last 20 years to the kinds of data we have in the market today, then within the next 2 years, it is reasonable to assume that we could see the S&P fall from 4,700 to 2,650, which would be a 43% decline. And if people start to panic after losing 40%, they wouldn't do that, would they, Perry?
Yeah. At 40%, people are starting to look for open windows in high buildings. So,
which means from 43, it could go overshoot the target and be even worse.
Sure.
Because quite often markets revert below their mean returns. So we have no idea if there's a bear market coming, but at these valuations and with the virus issue certainly not resolved, and with governments not having a clue about whether or not lockdowns do any good, they're doing them anyway. Corporate profits are slowing. They're not going away, but the rate of growth is slowing.
Definitely slowing down, yes.
And if the Fed actually raises interest rates, that means stock values get revalued at lower prices. Yeah, those are some risk factors that most people are ignoring.
And they're very normal, actually. Those are things that are, like you said, Don, reverting to the mean, reverting back to a more, you know, quote, normal way that the markets relate to each other. These artificially low interest rates are not normal. That's not the way this usually goes. The lightning fast recoveries we've seen because of the Fed dumping money on the market, that's not normal. That's not what usually happens. And hopefully we can get it unwound without a market crashing. There's really no sign of that right now. But there are plenty of signals that you need to be cautious right now and pay attention to what's going on out there.
Well, one of the things that caused concerns during the week was the testimony of Chairman Powell. On Tuesday, he did the Senate Banking Committee. On Wednesday, he did the House Finance Committee. And Janet Yellen was right there on his side. Is that they, because inflation is now a problem, it's no longer transitory. They're taking that word out of their reports now. Because inflation is a problem, the Fed has said they will stop buying bonds, which means liquidity is going to reduce. Well, with less liquidity, the market becomes more volatile. It also means there's more downside risk to it. And there are two regional Fed presidents who become voters after January, voting on the main Fed issues. And they believe that not only should they quit buying bonds, but they should be hiking interest rates at the same time instead of waiting to see what happens in the market. They're really aggressive. And if they're doing both of those, then assuming the market's going to new highs anytime soon may be irrational exuberance, to quote Dr. Greenspan.
It definitely looks that way. And you know, like you said, Don, we don't know what's going to happen, but those, they're all pointing to directions of a market slowdown and the need for caution. And we have the need to take a break here at the bottom of the hour. I'd like to remind everyone that if you're not getting our Week in Review, which is our weekly email newsletter, it's really easy to sign up for that. Just send us an email. Send it to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Put Week in Review in the subject line, and we need your first and last name in the body of the email, and you'll begin receiving that on Monday. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away.
Well, that's true. From a portfolio management standpoint, what you should not do ever is sit around and see how big the loss is going to get just because you're convinced it's a good company. Valuations get disconnected from prices, and they can stay disconnected for very long times.
way too long. And people, it doesn't matter how much you believe you're correct. The only thing that matters is what's actually going on in the market, which is why we always, every time we go into a trade in a client portfolio, we go in acknowledging the fact that we could be completely wrong. There's just no way to know because no one knows the future. And the key is, if you're wrong, cut the losses short. Don't hang around and say, well, I think I'm going to be right and I'll just hang on here. That's almost always a terrible idea. It's just tough for some people to go ahead and admit, hey, ooh, that was a bad trade. I got to get out of here.
So let's go back in history a little bit. We're talking about what happened with the tech bubble. Let's go back a little bit further than that and talk about gasoline. Anybody bought gasoline lately?
Yeah. I've been there.
I was looking at some of the older data, and in 1960, I was still waiting to get a driver's license when I was in high school. But I want to ride in the front seat because it's as close as I get to a steering wheel.
Yeah, well, I was three, so I would have had a car seat to ride with you. So,
okay. But this article that you found said in 1960, gasoline was 31 cents a gallon.
Right.
I mean, it seems to me that I saw it even lower than that. I lived in California, and I want to say gasoline was somewhere around 19 or 20 cents a gallon, and it was rising. But in any event, it's cheap. Can you imagine buying gasoline for even 30, 31 cents? I mean, you would be happy as a clam, right?
Oh, yeah. That'd be a good day.
If we were giving away a ticket for 31-cent gasoline, the phone would be ringing off the hook.
I believe so, yes.
But if you want to talk to us today, the phone can still ring. It's an open line. It's 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. But the question is, when you adjust for inflation, how bad is it? And it's really not all that bad. I mean, we had in today's webinar, we had one of our slides was gasoline above $5 a gallon. It's got to be California. And actually, there's places there where it's above $7, pushing $8. Right. And aren't you glad then that you're not driving an SUV?
I tell you, especially in California, yeah.
Yeah. And so the administration's solution for that is go out and spend $40,000 or $50,000 to buy an electric vehicle so you don't have to fill up your gas tank with $100. You know, I can buy a lot of gas on $50,000. But be that as it may, when we adjust for inflation, gasoline prices are really not that bad. It's just that it's a shock to our budget because even last year they were half of what they are today. And we don't take time to think about those things because even if you've had a wage increase, the odds are it's not keeping up with the cost of living. And so household after household is getting pressed. And none of us like that.
Plus gasoline prices are, as we said in the webinar this morning, that's in your face inflation. You're out driving around. You see those prices everywhere. Every gas station's got them up, of course. And so you're constantly reminded of the increasing cost of gasoline. And like you said, Don, you know, it's up a huge amount just from last year. But people forget last year we weren't driving anywhere. You know, we were locked down so that increase is, coming back to a more normal level, not not going to record levels. We're not even close to that yet. And I was a little surprised to see it myself. I thought it was going to be, you know, the real price of gasoline after inflation was going to be a little higher than it is, but it's not. So, which is why the amount of consumption of gasoline has not been reduced. It's everybody's still buying the same amount of gas. So, this price range has not affected demand at all.
Well, and our driving level is back to about what it was before the pandemic shutdown came in. And so our demand should be there. But you need to go to the grocery store. What are you going to do? Walk?
Right.
Well, in the Northwest.
The prices at the grocery store are so high, you can't buy enough groceries that you need a trunk anyway. So, yes, walking's not too far off. Yeah. So.
Well, I was just thinking about that. I was in a grocery store down in Tacoma, which is not where we normally shop, but we were for that day. And going by the refrigerator there, there's eggs. There's $9 and change for 18 eggs.
Were they golden eggs?
What? Yeah, I don't know. I looked at that and I just shook my head. I said, I think I'm going to go home and go back to Fred Meyer and see if they are they are cheaper over there. And they were. But it wasn't. It was less than a year ago. I was paying $4 for a dozen, and now they're $6. I mean, that's a huge increase. And you're thinking, well, it's $2. Well, I buy two dozen at a time, so it's $4. I mean, what? All that stuff multiplied over all the things that you're taking out,
right?
And now they're at least in Kitsap County, they're charging you 8 cents for every bag you take.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes they come with handles and sometimes they don't. We've got Dave from Spanaway who wants to talk about buy and hold for the long term. So glad to have you out there, Dave. You are live on the Investor Resources Show with Don and Perry. Go ahead, Dave.
Okay, before we get started, first of all, I'm in my 80s, and when I was a teenager, this is not my question, but when I was a teenager, I used to buy gasoline in Kansas at 17 cents a gallon.
Nice. Very nice.
that was when I was a teenager.
There we go. That's a beautiful thing.
Okay, now my question is buy and hold, and I'm going to run some stocks by you because I know you don't have a lot of time, but like I say, I'm in my 80s, and I bought Microsoft in June of 94, still have it, Walmart. And I'm going to round these off by the year here. Walmart in 1999, Texas Instruments in 99, Taiwan Semiconductor 99, Home Depot 99, Carnegra 2001, Costco 2000, McDonald's 99, Starbucks 99, and Oracle 99. Now, I bought all these things for buy and hold I just want to run them by you. Every one of these things have been paying dividends over the years. What's your advice?
Well, buying for cash flow is so. If you were buying 20 years ago, you were buying. So you were in your 60s when you were buying these. Is that correct?
Late 50s and early 60s. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so you were approaching retirement, and you were committing money to. You were buying the dividend. That was your objective.
I just reinvested everything. I didn't take the dividends. I just reinvested everything. Do it today.
Yeah, sure. The dividend was your objective, though. Is that correct?
I didn't hear you. What, sir?
Was buying the dividend your objective? You wanted the stock that paid a dividend?
Not really. These were just good companies.
Okay.
I'm making $6 to $8 an hour. So, you know, I saved all my money. And most of these I bought in blocks of 100, you know, and then... couple of them have been through, you know, four splits. And
sure.
Costco pays, you know, a special dividend every 2 years.
Yes.
But these are...
So the buy and hold is, and it works as long as the market's in an uptrend. But let's take Microsoft from January of 2000. It actually, the stock price fell, and it didn't recover to that price until... late 2015. So
I bought some more.
Okay, well that's fine, but that's a that issue is that you had that whole 15 years of time where other things were outperforming Microsoft.
Now, yeah, but don't forget it. It split four times on me.
Well, that doesn't matter. It's still a function of how do you get back your original capital, because when it splits, the price drops. So I'm just looking at what was it worth in total and how long did it take to get back to that after the tech bubble collapsed. And it took almost 16 years to get even, which means that there were lots of other things that were outperforming Microsoft, which requires a management approach to it. Buy and hold works for people who don't need the money, or who, in your case, you were willing to accept the dividend payments and not worry about accumulating more capital. A stock split doesn't give you more capital. It does give you more shares, but the value after the split's the same as it was beforehand with less shares. So that's a different approach for people who have a very long-term view of the market. That's not our view, because we've been through the issue with clients who, when the tech bubble collapsed and their accounts were down 50 and 60%, they didn't have time on their side to wait another 15 years to get even. They needed to protect the capital along the way. And our comments on the earlier part of the show is that we're back where similar types of risk are there. And for in your position with a very low cost basis and being able to use the dividend cash flow, it maybe that won't matter. You'll transfer it off to your children and grandchildren in a legacy transfer and avoid what you have as a significant long-term capital gain if you sold them. Our clients currently are typically people who aren't looking for 20 years before they tap their account, and they don't want to go through a 25 or 40 or 50% drop in value. And on prior webinars that we've done, we've illustrated that getting out at market highs when things are irrational, preserving capital and getting back in at lower prices, which you could have done with Microsoft between the 2000 and the 2002 mid-year low, you would have been even further ahead than you are now. So the buy and hold in this case worked for you, but is there another way to manage that and actually enhance those returns? And the answer is yes. But not everybody wants to do that.
Well, you got all that capital gains on income tax.
Sure, and there's nothing wrong. There's absolutely nothing wrong with a long-term hold like that, Dave, as long as you recognize that you are actually taking a tremendous amount of risk. First of all, you're owning a single company. Then you're owning a single company that you held through a number of 30 and 40% drawdowns. And there are a lot of companies that once they're in a 40% drawdown, they just disappear. They vaporize. So you're taking that single company risk. And in your case, the ones you pick, you know, good for you. They're all still there, and you did very well in the long run. But it's a risky endeavor to do that. It's not that it's safer; it's that you incurred the risk, and in these cases, you came out ahead.
Yes, I agree. I did make two mistakes. One was called Enron, and one was called Worldcon.
Well, that's a couple doozies. Yeah,
Dave,
they can't all be winners. Yeah.
Dave, we have to give you kudos for that, because most investors never admit to the ones that were their mistakes.
No, never hear about the downside.
But thanks for the call, Dave. We're up against a break right now. So thank you very much. Glad you're out there. That was good input.
Thank you, Dave. Super. It's glad to hear somebody that was doing a good job, and they were. Dave was. If you'd like to come to our next webinar, it's coming up Saturday, January 9th. 9 a.m. You can sign up for that at iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. We got plenty of time to get a call on the board for you this afternoon. If you'd like to give us a call, the number is 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. We'd be happy to talk to you. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Clearly now the rain is gone. I can see all.
Yeah, well, while we were on the break, I looked up Microsoft back in that time frame that Dave was talking about. And, you know, we don't know exactly the day he bought it. So I'm just in the middle of 1999 until the middle of 2002, where it finally bottomed out. And that's a 58% drop. And he just closed his eyes. I mean, as he said, he was still working, not making a lot of money, and he was just accumulating shares. Now, if you actually go back to initially from July of 99 until March of 2000, I mean, it looked like this was a real winner. I mean, he's making a ton of money. But then as the market corrected in the next couple of years from its high, Microsoft was minus 65%. And most people don't have the emotional fortitude to sit back and watch something drop 58 or 60% and say it's all okay.
That is a tough hold. And usually at that point, people are more or less ready to just write it off anyway once it's down 60%.
So anyway, he had
great success after that, though. You bet.
He did. I mean, the thing came back, and from its high, as I said, it took 15 years for him to reach that all-time high again, even adjusted for splits. But we've been talking about inflation, and one of the things that has surprised vendors, retail and wholesalers, is that they're able to raise prices and people are still coming through the door.
Indeed. It's happening right now. And we're having this surge of inflation, which is big. It's really big. But it's so far, consumer spending is hanging right in there. And we're still out there buying stuff.
So we, in fact, I was thinking about we were going to be doing the show and talking about this stuff. It wouldn't surprise me if many of us go out in our garage and look around and say, it looks a lot like a small Costco in here.
Right?
Look at the stack of paper towels. How about the stack of toilet paper and whatever? I mean, I've got soft soap jars out here because I've been looking for them, couldn't find them. And that did.
Now they're there, yeah.
Well, I need one, but give me all three of them because I don't know when I'm going to find them the next time.
Not getting caught short again, that's right.
And what happens is that depletes the shelves and the store doesn't know when they're going to get more. I mean, I go into Fred Meyer for grocery shopping. I'm looking for something. I say, do you have any? I say, man, no. When are you going to get some? We don't know.
That is the answer.
When it shows up, it'll be in the shelf. Can you hold any for me? No, I can't do that.
You got to be here if you want it.
That's right. Because somebody else is asking for the same thing, and we can't play favorites. And all of that just supports the demand, and people are, well, I know it's 25% more expensive than the last one, but I'm taking it because I need it, and it's the only one I can find. It's like the conversation we had with Don last week on my search for barkeeper's friend cleanser.
Right, right.
He had one.
I've got
one. He was willing to make a deal.
What you willing to give me for it? Yeah,
that's right.
Oh, you can do this.
I still can't find any. But you adapt. That's what's happening. But prices keep rising, and the question is, how transitory is this stuff? And with prices rising, with labor not knocking the doors down for looking for a job,
right?
Businesses are hiking wages. When the wages go up in non-union shops, the unions come back and say, hey, those guys don't have our training. We're specialists. We need a contract change, or we go on strike, which they did with John Deere.
It just happened. That's right.
Okay, so they're out for a month. John Deere gives them $8,500 to return, plus an immediate 5% pay raise. And the next 2 years, they get another 10% in each of those 2 years. Well, that money's not going to go away. Deere is not going to be able to go back at the end of the contract and say, yeah, well, that was just a one-time
deal. Let's
dial
that back a little bit. Yeah, not happening. Yeah.
That makes inflation a whole lot less transitory, which is why the Fed is saying it's probably time to quit talking about that, because wages are sticky. Prices are going up. We're going to have to learn how to adapt to this stuff. And that changes household budgets. It changes discretionary spending, which typically means it impacts negatively discretionary spending, which is hard on the economy. And when that happens, all of a sudden, corporate profits start shrinking, stock prices start softening, and you have to figure out whether this is just an extended time of getting used to new situation, or are we actually going to unwind a whole bunch of stuff that never should have happened?
Right. And you know, a lot of people did get substantial support from the government. They did, a lot of them saved that money, and now they're out there spending it. And when that money's gone, we may get a little more realistic reaction to the big price increases. We'll see. I did read an article last week that was saying that credit card applications were on the upswing, which they hadn't been for a couple of years. So people may be already looking to, you know, extend a little credit now because we're kind of running low on our regular cash flow at our spend rate here. So maybe we're starting to get to that point where it's happening, but the consumer spending isn't slowing down yet, and the inflation's not affecting the flow of cash yet.
Yeah, well, inflation's not slowing down, and people are trying to spend to get what they can while they still can. And the banks love credit cards.
Oh, sure.
Because that's the only place they're really making any money. If you want a business loan or a personal loan, well, all of a sudden, we go back to the old adage, your banker is your friend when you don't need him.
That's it.
And not so much when you do.
And the bank is not so happy to loan you, $300,000 at 3% to buy a house, but they'll loan you, $200 to go out to dinner at 12%. Sure, no problem.
Or 24.
Yeah, or 24. Yeah. So it's like they'll take that trade all day long.
Yeah. So banking, financial sector is actually one of those areas that has not done very well with
Correct.
This recent sell-off.
Yeah.
And if with the advent of rising interest rates, you would think, mm-hmm. and under normal circumstances, the financial area would be doing very well. But higher interest rates, banks make more money. But it's not working out this way. Investors have been abandoning that sector. It will take some time before that reverses. The only two sectors doing well this last week, and not stellar, but that's been consumer staples and utilities, mm-hmm. which are normally defensive sectors. That's where
right.
people go
yep.
when they have to stay in the stock market, but they don't want to lose quite as much money as if they stayed in
about
grocery.
The direction. That's right.
That's right. So even Jerome Powell has said that maybe inflation, transitory inflation going away, and they never define transitory. That's part of the problem.
Makes it easy for them, yep.
we think it's short term, but it turns out transitory meant sometime in the next 5 years. Well, that sounds more than short term, but it's all in the eye of the beholder.
Yep.
And the Fed and Fed President and Janet Yellen
yeah.
were kind of in conflict about how to deal with that. She's still saying it's transitory and it'll work its way out. And Chairman Powell is saying, and I think we're going to have to deal with this sooner than later, which adds more turmoil to the market.
I bet they talk before they release any more statements.
Yeah, well,
tighten that up a little bit.
That was live testimony
yep,
in Congress.
Yep.
So that was, they thought they were prepared, but it didn't turn out that
Oops,
way.
Yeah.
Anyway, we did a webinar today. If you want to watch that, go to IRIradio.com, IRIRadio.com. Click on the video tab. And while you're there, register for January. And you will be, if you can't attend that one on January 8th, we'll send you a replay link. We're up at the end of the show. You want to talk to us during the week, 800-317-9119, 800-317-9119, email help@irradio.com. Lord willing, we will be back next week. Stay tuned for more information. Lord bless you, your family, and God bless America. Have a great weekend.